The Premier League season is over, but we still have the FA Cup final, Champions League and Europa League to come. And Bet365 are offering a wide range of markets, including first, last or anytime goal scorer. With over 45 million members, it's the world's favourite online betting company. With the Bet365 Bet Builder, you can combine match results, players to score, number of goals and more to create your own personalised bet. And if you can't watch the games live, with Bet365 Match Live feature, you can follow every moment through live graphics and text. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sports betting company. The app can be downloaded from the Google Play and Apple App Store. Over 18s only. Please gamble responsibly. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by TheAthletic.com. Please, children, gather round, pull up a seat and listen as we look back over the 2019-2020 season. My name's Taylor Payne and I am joined by the glorious Mr. George Culkin. How are you, George? Are you okay?
The football is over. I'm full of joy. Waffles loves sausage, but he's a strange boy.
Gets in. All the poems are coming out again. And of course, we are joined by the ever-ready, ever-present, happy-go-lucky scamp that is Chris Sergeant Waffles Worf. Chris, how are you doing? Are you okay?
Well, I'm a little bit annoyed that George is glorious and I am a scamp. I mean, it's just... I'm not surprised, but I am a bit annoyed.
Well, you know...
You are a scamp. You are, yes.
Your bed, Chris, you have to line it. Yeah.
Scamp. It's scamp cheeky, is absolutely the right word.
Cheeky, yeah, little scamp.
Lovable scamp. Robin
holding
to my
sausages.
Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, how are we doing, lads? Has this year completely drained you of all energy, life, excitement? A sense of
Taylor,
dread
we,
has just
we,
entered
we
the
did,
room.
We did say this would be upbeat.
Did we?
The black clouds have gathered very, very early.
I didn't sign up for that, George. I'm sorry, but nah, come on now. There's been some fun stuff, hasn't there? We've had some fun times.
Yeah, and I think we're going to try and do a bit of that today, aren't we? We're going to look back over the season, but we're going to sort of concentrate a little bit on some of the fun stuff and the happy stuff and the stuff that made us smile, because difficult though it is to remember that sometimes, bearing in mind all the stuff that's happening around the club. We don't want to look back on the last 11 months and think of it as a complete waste of existence, do we?
Even if it was.
Even if it was.
I mean, this season's been going for 5 years, hasn't it? This is the longest season ever in the history of anything, of football, of anything. It's just been, it's non-stop, has it? It has stopped. It's stopped massively.
No, that's the one thing that it did do. Yeah, it did stop.
It did stop. It stopped, for a long time. But it just seems like it's gone on and on and on, doesn't it? But, you know, that could be a good thing. I like football. It could be nice if it goes on and on and on. But,
I like football. I like football. Yeah. What's that going to do with it?
Yeah, nothing to do with what we've been seeing recently. Anyway, Chris, what's your thoughts generally on the season? How would you sum it up? No pressure.
Well, I'm pleased that it's over, first and foremost. That is that is probably the primary takeaway that I'd give. But you've said it. It was extremely long. Obviously, Steve Bruce has said himself when he took charge, he didn't expect that nearly a year later the season still wouldn't be finished. And actually, the post-restart for Newcastle turned out to be pointless, as we thought it was going to be, because if they hadn't played post-restart, then they would have still stayed up, given the number of points they already had beforehand. I mean, the football, as we've said, has been absolutely forgettable for the most part, and it just feels like, although this is the longest season in history, by the end of it, Newcastle United are no further forward than before it started. So I know it's talking about being upbeat, but just that is the reality. If we're actually talking about how I look back on the season, it's one that I would like to consign to history in terms of what was actually the football from it, and the fact that it was just another Mike Ashley 13th place finish, no real progress in any way, shape or form, and that we end the season as we started it, which is almost in an existential crisis.
Again, this isn't massively sort of upbeat, but, you know, we started the season with all those questions surrounding the club about what would happen next, about, you know, would the club sort of fall away after all that sort of change in the summer? And really, we've kind of got to the end of the season and none of those big questions have been answered at all. Chris and I sort of did a piece around the last game that sort of, you know, the season began with a boycott and it ended with an empty stadium, but sort of joining those dots, how we kind of got there is the sort of interesting part of it. And on the first day of the season, Chris, you know, did a piece that was half inside the stadium, half out, talking to people who were protesting, talking to people who were staying away. And, you know, the remarkable thing is that none of that has sort of been addressed at all, that we're still in this situation where the ownership is uncertain, the management is uncertain, the whole feeling around the club is uncertain. Will people continue to go when crowds are allowed back? You know, what happens next? That whole thing about this club, what happens next? It's that constant sort of, it's like that sort of, this club is like a constant lump in the throat, or it's this constant sort of churn of the stomach where you can't quite feel happy. You can't, you know, you just don't know. And that's the sort of big thing. I mean, one thing I did do for that piece is I spoke to Steve Bruce, actually. And if I'm being completely honest, I was in the bath at the time, so this may not sound brilliant.
This has gone weird.
But this has gone weird again. But there's a couple of minutes from Steve Bruce in which he says that, you know, that where the club finished this season isn't what he wants either.
I'm sorry, George, I've just been sick in my mouth.
As I've said from day one, I only want what's best for the club, to try and take it and edge it forward and try and do my best. And in some eyes, I'm not ever going to be that cup of tea, which I understand that too. But I think we've done okay. We've done okay, George, considering. However, we can't just, none of us want it just to be, well, we're in the Premier League and that's the aim.
So when you're in the bath, is it bubbles? Do you go bubbles usually, or do you go
a rubber duck or a boat
just to make it a bit more manly?
It's bubbles, and I'm also always fully clothed because I don't want to see my own nakedness.
Andy has power pods, one of which is Steve Bruce in the bath at the time with him when he was on the call.
Can I just ask, George, did Steve Bruce know you were in the bath?
No, I didn't move. I didn't move. I had to record it. I had to record it on my iPad while putting it on my phone. I wish I hadn't said this now. It's upbeat.
Hello, Steve.
It's
just
upbeat.
To let you know, Steve. Just to let you know, I'm in the bath at the minute. Click.
No, I didn't do that. Listen, some of our conversation. Well, I mean, I have spoken to him this season and interviewed him while he was buying creosote. So, I mean, I don't think it's any weirder than that. Hello, son, I'm just buying creosote.
And when you've bumped into him in the park, he's always been asking what you've been doing when you've been out for a run, hasn't he?
Oh yeah, there was that other thing. Yeah, I was running. I was literally in my running stuff. I was wearing shorts. I was running.
What are you doing?
I was wearing running shoes and a running top. I was wearing running headphones. I came to a halt. I pulled out my headphones, and he said to me, "What are you doing, son?"
Well, just getting a chopping, Steve.
I don't know how to answer that.
Oh my God! So was he all right? Was he in good? Was he in decent spirits though? Was he okay?
Well, he was exactly like the rest of us are. He was, you know, tired, looking forward to a break, wondering what happens next. He, like the rest of us, has been sort of engulfed in this sort of uncertainty, except that, you know, the difference is that he's had to kind of plot away through it. You know, it's been tough. It's been tough for him. I'm not saying that people are going to kind of feel sympathy, but he's come back to his hometown club. He felt he couldn't turn that challenge down. And, you know, there's this myth about kind of Newcastle fans not accepting Londoners or not accepting outsiders. And of course, Steve, in a lot of ways, is an outsider because he's been away from the region for so long, barring Sunderland. But he's found it incredibly tough. I mean, he's found it incredibly tough. That said, he does say that, you know, the response he's had from people in person has by and large been very, very positive. But, you know, this is an extraordinary club. We all know that. It's an extraordinary club at an extraordinary moment in its existence. And I think to repeat, I mean, you can argue till the cows come home about whether he's done a good job or a bad job. And we've seen this played out sort of in the wider media, through pundits, on Twitter, with fans and stuff like that. But the thing that I always come back to is that it could be a lot worse than it is now. And
yeah.
In lots of ways, yeah. It probably should be. And, you know, you can say the club spent a lot of money last summer and so they should have done better. You can also say they lost all their goals from last season and spent a shitload of money on a centre-forward who can't score goals. So effectively, they've had to get through this season without a striker. And, you know, for Jonjo Shelvey to end this season with to be the top scorer with 6 goals, you can look at the league table and think of it as a miracle. And I'm not saying it's been fun along the way, but it hasn't. Anyway, we're supposed to be being happy. Come on.
There's been some fun along the way. I mean, let's be honest, though. We look back at this season and the drama which kind of seems to follow Newcastle United. Just one piece of drama like that would be enough for some teams across the season, whereas we kind of have a change of manager at the start, then we have a potential rumble and takeover saga which goes on. We have the coronavirus break. We have changes in the tactics. Do we go 3 at the back or 4 at the back? We have massive injury problems. We have Matt Ritchie kicking corner flags into the testicles of fans sitting near the pitch. I mean, the amount of drama and the amount of twists and turns that the season's taken would be enough for most fans, just having one of those. But it's Newcastle, and it wouldn't be the same without all of this nonsense, would it?
No, well, this is this club, really. Yeah, as you say, there is never a dull moment. And even though the football itself has been dull, to say the very least, the actual drama around it, the storylines have still been there.
Has it been dull, Chris?
The football, yes or no? Has, yeah. The football.
I think the 90 minutes of football on the pitch have been some of the dullest moments of the entire
many
season.
A dull
I think
moment.
The rest of it's been
many
on,
a dull moment.
Has been off the pitch, hasn't it?
The moment that summed up the season for me, I had to do like an alternative season review for The Athletic. It's up online now, so you can
nice
read
plug.
That. Thank you. And basically, it was a moment that sums up the season, and for me, it would be John Joe Shelvey's goal at Sheffield United, or really that Sheffield United
yeah.
game in general,
yeah.
because the game itself, Newcastle were awful, were absolutely battered.
Yeah, totally.
Martin Dubravka kept them in the game first half, a good goal from a good header from Alan Saint-Maximin. But then everything around that second goal, it was bizarre. There was a significant amount of fortune about it. There was also ingenuity,
yeah.
the fact that Shelvey had thought about it. He said he'd spoken to the referee beforehand and got through and scored. And then, obviously, it needed VAR to give the goal. And so somehow Newcastle left the stadium that night and returned to Tyneside with all 3 points. And really, for me, yeah, that summed up the season. That it was
yeah.
sort of a weird mix of luck. the rare bit of brilliance from a few players, primarily Saint-Maximin for the most part, but the rare bit of brilliance here and there, a heck of a lot of luck, some awful football, some very good saves from the goalkeeper, some good defending, and somehow that's how Newcastle managed to muddle away through. So that would, for me, be the way that really, the moment that summarises the season, that goal and that game.
I was there for that game, and I'd forgotten that. I'd forgotten how bizarre that moment was, and I will not believe until my dying day how they came away from that game with a win, but they did, and you know, I think we did a piece, you and I, Chris, earlier this season, sort of, which was headlined Newcastle WTF, and it has been that sort of season.
It's been a WTF season, hasn't it? I mean, that Everton game, God Almighty.
WTF stands for where's the football. Stands for where's the football, as well as what's the fuck. What's the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
But that Everton game, that 2-2 at Goodison Park. I mean, come on. George, you were there. I mean, that's the most Newcastle thing ever, isn't it? It was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I mean, and so it has been a season. It's been a season of moments. That's where we found our joy, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there was Bournemouth after lockdown, and this feeling of, wow, that was actually a sort of 90-minute performance, albeit against a team that's been relegated, and it wasn't actually a sign of sort of what was to come, because things have then fallen away quite badly towards the end. But really, it's been a season of moments. That's not to say there's not been some good victories along the way, but for me, yeah, I mean, you and I, Taylor, for the West Brom game in the cup, that was
yes.
my kind of favorite day, because there was the, you know, the coach
there?
Trip. Yeah, it was your peace pudding sandwiches with the stuff of legend, Geordie Hummus. You know, that was a brilliant
was a day.
But in terms of, like, well, I can't even say for 90 minutes, because for 90 minutes at Everton, Newcastle were absolutely shite. But there was just being in the... I mean, and it's also the thing that I've missed most from football coming back is that human interaction, and it's away fans really that sort of make the atmosphere at
yeah,
stadiums, and
absolutely.
Just being there, I was so lucky to be there for Goodison to see Newcastle stink the place out for 90 odd minutes, and then those two late goals, you know, earning a draw, 2-2 draw, which is utterly inconsequential, But it was just fucking brilliant. The limbs everywhere, the shouting, the just that sort of disbelief, no one knowing what had happened, no one knowing who'd scored, how that could be, how that could have happened. And it's that evening of, you know, singing and chanting and reminding everybody sort of who we were, albeit, you know, against the odds in terms of the game itself, and then for that sort of explosion of joy right at the end. And it, as I say, it was inconsequential. It didn't matter. That point didn't matter. But it was just, it was wonderful. And that was what football can sort of do. And, you know, the songs of Who's That Team We Call United over and over and over and over and over again. And for the, you know, for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, for 15 minutes, that was like the only thing that mattered.
So, half time, Newcastle are 2-0 up. I don't think any of us were expecting that. No. What do you reckon?
No, definitely not. No, can't believe it. I mean, a few nervous moments at the back there, but two really good goals, and they've looked sharp. I mean, there's been all the same things that we're used to seeing in this team are there, but two really incisive movements that have led to the goals, and 2-0 up at half time.
Bloody hell,
I can't believe it.
Bloody hell indeed, George. The ball was played through, and Almiron burst onto it and tucked it away beautifully, and the whole away just went completely wild. It was raining cocks, wasn't it?
It's been raining cocks, hallelujah, it's been raining cocks. I mean, it's not a weather condition I've ever experienced before in my life, but I mean, bring it on. And the other thing is, the first goal went in, a pyro, which we don't obviously condone, but that's been set off literally three seats away from us. Someone's, I presume, has thrown that, so we've spent a lot of time breathing in purple smoke.
Yeah.
So it's been raining cocks and it's been purple smoke.
Is this not a Prince album? It sounds like
that was his third album, wasn't it?
And I love the fact, I mean, Chris was there in the press box, but
yeah,
I just wrote this stream of consciousness from the away end, and that was how we reported on the game. And, you know, and I love the fact that we have that freedom to sort of do different things like that.
Yeah.
And I was able to sort of record the sights, the smells, the vomit in the ladies' toilets, you know, all that kind of thing.
Why were you in the ladies' toilets?
I don't need to explain everything. The pissed fella coming back from the food stand, just looking down at his hot dog and saying, "Horse's cock," and it's just you sort of see all this surreal stuff. I love it, and that's the bit I miss.
Well, I was just going to say, I was going to go back to the West Brom game, and actually the day of the West Brom game. So I remember being at Central Station and being on the phone to George. And I remember offering George the chance that, do you want me to write something from the game? Because obviously he was doing the away trip with you, you were doing the podcast, and George was going to do a bit. And I remember specifically saying to George, do you want me to write a bit straight after the game so I can go up first thing in the morning so you've got the day to be able to write it? And George was saying, oh, no, I can write this on the bus on the way down. It'll be all right. I can get most of it done. And I remember saying, oh, well, just so you know, George, and I was thinking, you haven't been on an away trip for quite a while, George. If you think you're going to get any? And within 5 minutes of him having been on the bus, I got a text from saying, yeah, I'm not going to get any work done here whatsoever on the trip down.
Oh, yeah. Joe Linton's on fire, Taylor, on the way back.
Yes, he was for 3 hours solid, wasn't he, on the way
desire.
Back.
Yep. Your defence is terrifying, Joe Linton's on fire. Oh, my God.
I mean, it was that incredible. I mean, what dreams. A day, though. What a day. I mean, we nearly missed the bus coming out of Sutton Coldfield. We got on the
didn't
bus.
You
and
lose people?
Make it on.
We did, yeah.
We left people behind.
Yeah.
They made it to the stadium and saw the game. There was inflatable penises galore. You know, it was a wonderful, wonderful day. It was great. And it was a reminder of how much fun it is to go and do those trips, because it's been a while since I did one of those as well. And it was great, great fun. I mean, there has been a bit of fun this season, hasn't there? There has been some little bright sparks, and I would suggest that the brightest spark that we've seen this season, apart from Miguel Almiron's smile, obviously, has been Alan Saint-Maximin and his exploits across the year. The impact he's had has been fantastic, isn't it, George?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about sort of players of the season, then you certainly, you know, there's a case to make for Dubravka, as there often is. There's a case to be made for for Isaac Hayden just because I love Isaac Hayden. There's a case to be made for James Perch just because you love James Perch.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
Taylor, even though he hasn't played for the club for years. But no, I mean, in terms of uplift, in terms of that sort of edge of the seat excitement that, I do think possibly has happened at Newcastle at some point, dim, distant moment in the past. He is the one, yeah, he is the one. And he's the one, you know, I think we talked about him a few weeks ago, and I sort of said I certainly wasn't convinced at the start of the season that I thought there was a bit of sort of, you know, could see the trickery and you could see the sort of talent on the ball, but would there ever be an end product? And, you know, there has been as the season, you know, he came back from lockdown, all guns blazing. He's obviously been very tired in the last couple of games, but he has had that kind of focus. And I think he is, you know, I think he is a difficult player to manage. I think, you know, I think there is that side to his personality, but when he's on form, Newcastle don't have another player like him. And he's great to watch because he can beat people. He wants to take people on. He wants the ball. And it's a team that we've written about this season that doesn't want the football, or that often doesn't want the football. No team has had less possession than Newcastle this season. And although that doesn't tell you everything, it does tell you quite a lot. So actually having a player like Saint-Maximin is important because he can get the team up the pitch, but he's also important just from that feeling of, okay, yeah, we've got a special player, we've got a player that can do something, and you know, he's a joy to watch in that sense.
This podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, the expert in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineering tools for your family jewels. And Manscaped has just launched in the UK. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job, so you can be one of the first men in the country to experience Manscaped's life-changing products. Their third-generation trimmer...
Is it a chainsaw?
Can I get on with the script, please, George, before you start jumping in? Their third-generation hedge trimmer, features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce manscaping accidents, and the water-resistant technology allows you to groom whilst in the shower or in the bath, talking to Steve Bruce. We've got a special offer for you right now, listening to this podcast. Get 20% off and free shipping by using the code EPL20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping and Manscaped by using the code EPL20. Happy shaving, and I hope that is the only 20% off. George, are you going to get one of those?
Hashtag knee pubes.
Knee pubes.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's the future, this, isn't it? This is the future.
This is what all the lads are doing.
Specialist equipment to get rid of the old pubes. I'd like to know where Chris stands on this subject.
How do you mean by where I stand?
Very far away, I'd imagine. I'm not saying his hands over his eyes.
I'm not talking about your sack shaving stance. Oh, that was quite a good alliteration. I'm not talking about your sack shaving stance. I'm talking about where you stand on the whole idea of male grooming.
Each to their own. I think it's. I think some more natural. Some, you know, people
nicely
prefer.
Dodged.
You're quite uncomfortable. You're quite uncomfortable nicely talking about dodged. Stuff like this, aren't you, Chris?
Yeah.
For a man so ready to talk about meat, he doesn't want to talk about his meat.
No. I think it's important. I mean, so my personal philosophy on this is to be streamlined for the summer. I like to be streamlined for the summer, and I like to grow a full all over body pelt for the winter. I think this is, you know, prehistoric man kicking in. It's those old instincts. But I want to be one giant ball of hair in the cold winter months. And then when summer comes along, I want to be streamlined so I can catch that gazelle. And nothing is going to interfere with your catching of that gazelle with hairy balls getting caught on brambles and stuff like that. So that's very much I'm all in favour of manscaping, and I will be signing up for that.
For the second time today, I've been slightly sick in my mouth. Delightful. He's one of those players where... We've had a few of them down the years, and you know, you're kind of a little bit loath to put him in with the likes of
Peter Beardsley and people like that and Paul Gascoigne, but he's the type of player that makes the crowd take a little intake of breath when he gets the ball and you're just not quite sure what's going to happen next. Hatem Ben Arfa used to do the same thing. You would just lean forward a little bit in your seat, wouldn't you, when you saw him get the ball, whether you were watching it on the telly at home or if you were in the stand itself. Every time he gets the ball at his feet and he looks up and he looks to go forward, and I love a player who does that. And he puts defenders on the back foot as well, and his pace is scary. And there was times this season when he was just completely unplayable. I remember the West Ham game down at the Olympic Stadium. The Olympic Stadium, do we call it that? The London Stadium, sorry. And he essentially
The shittest stadium.
God awful, isn't it?
What we call
it's
it.
Not a football
yeah.
stadium.
Oh, it's horrific.
With your seat 3/4 of a mile away from the side of the pitch. And he basically ruined Pablo Zabaleta that day and just turned him inside out. And it was a joy to watch, an absolute joy to watch. Chris, what's your feelings on Saint, Maxi, Alan, whatever people call him? He's got 5 different nicknames. ASM.
Well, I think that West Ham game is a good reflection point to compare to what we then saw post lockdown from, because he did terrorise West Ham, but also he missed a series of opportunities and the final ball was terrible.
Absolutely.
And so that was the difference. The first half of the season, the end product wasn't there, and he what it was in terms of, until he got to the point of shooting or giving that final pass, he absolutely terrorised them, but then that wasn't there. And certainly for the first few games post lockdown, what we saw was a Sam Maximan who added end product and was defining games rather than just being sort of the highlight reel of them. And I mean, I was fortunate enough to go to France in December. First of all, I got to go and see Laurent Robert for a wonderful piece, which we really enjoyed interviewing there, which you can read. And then also, I got to retrace Alan Saint-Maximin's steps, both in Nice, Monaco, and then also up in Paris, where I was lucky enough to meet his family and some of his former coaches and just hear about him and how he is the player that he is and where that sort of seductive slaloming, I'll call it, has come from in terms of...
Ooh! Seductive. Oh. Say that in a French accent. Say that in a French accent, Chris.
No.
Seductive.
You wouldn't seductive dare, would he?
Slaloming.
Seductive slaloming. Oh, it's been a while since I've had a seductive slalom,
Chris.
I tell you, honestly.
Right. Chris.
Hello.
Chris. Laurent Robert bought you a selection of pastries as well, didn't he?
Oh, he did, yes, he did. He turned up with a big white bag. It was about 6 pastries. I mean, there was only me, him, and his son there, but he did bring about 10. And I'd already had breakfast, but I happily had second and third breakfast by having some of it. I had a pan au chocolat and a croissant, so that was delicious.
Did you seductive slalom your way for the pastries that Laurent Robert bought?
See, the thing about Chris is that he's... To get him engaged, all you have to do is mention food. I've noticed that over the course of this
Absolutely.
Podcast. You just... Chris, talk about meat for 5 minutes. He'll do that. He'll bring him onto pastries. He'll talk about that.
Yeah, what's been your sausage of the season, Chris?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm trying to think if the press food anywhere when we were served press food, obviously pre-lockdown, whether anywhere there was sausages. And I don't think there was, which is slightly disappointing.
Disgusting. Honestly, I'd be writing a letter to my local MP, Chris, if I was you. That's terrible.
It is very disappointing. I mean, because really, if you just serve sausage and mash, I'd be delighted.
Gravy or do you go mushy peas?
Oh, both. Both.
Oh, you dirty bastard. Right. So we've obviously gotten everybody's appetite ready now. So what would we say would be our goal of the season? And let's have a little discussion about that. My personal favourite has got to be, I don't think it's technically the greatest goal in the world, but for the moment that it was, is Matty Longstaff's goal against Manchester United at St James's Park. How about you, George?
Well, that was a great moment, wasn't it? And, you know, it seems... sort of a bit ridiculous and kind of very sad that we had that amazing moment. Oh my God, here's this young kid and he's playing alongside his brother in the centre of Newcastle's midfield. And it's against Man United. And he's, apart from kind of being a story in terms of his contract and his contract expiring this summer, Matty Longstaff has sort of ceased to exist.
Fizzled away, hasn't he?
And has fizzled away, yeah. And that's very sad. And I don't think that's all... you know, all to do with him, but albeit that's a kind of complicated situation. But that was a fabulous moment. I mean, I would go back to Lejeune's goals at Everton just for the moment of it. Again, you know, not glorious goals at all, but that was the moment I loved the most and sort of had that, you know, had that kind of just feeling of, ah, oh, brilliant from. And to be honest, I can't remember any others.
Chris, what about you? What's been the best goal you've seen this season? We've talked about moments there, but what's been the best goal for, like, spectacular football?
I mean, aesthetically, I'd probably go Jonjo Shelvey's against Manchester City, the sort of curling shot from the edge of the area. I think
that was a lovely goal.
It was also important.
Yeah, I remember that one now.
If you ask me for my favourite goal, it would be Miguel Almirón against Crystal Palace, just for that sort of moment. Being in the stadium that day, the stadium hasn't been loud for most of the season, partly because there weren't fans for the final however many games, but also even earlier than that, given the situation that's been at Newcastle and obviously the boycotts and people not turning up. That moment in December when he finally scored and the noise and the celebration when he hugged the ball boy in the corner. That for me was one of the few sort of moments on the back of your neck stand up. That was a few moments this season. And so for that one for be my favourite, but probably aesthetically I'd go for Jonjo Shelvey's.
And don't forget big Andy Carroll rolling back the years at the back post there, nodding the ball down for him. Oh, I thought Kevin Nolan was going to run onto that for a minute. Oh, my word. I mean, that's the only time he did it.
Yeah, he moved all season.
That was a lovely moment. Chris's intriguing character because of his love of kind of meat, his bizarre love of meat. But he's useful because he can actually remember stuff. And I can't remember anything.
He's got an encyclopedic knowledge, hasn't he, of Newcastle and things that have happened. It's quite
wonderful.
I'll take that as
a compliment, because which I've rarely had throughout the whole course of the history of the Pod on the Town, I think. So I will cherish that.
Well, what happens is whenever we have meetings or little conversations and we don't know what games are coming up or what games there's been or when somebody's scored, Chris's a little voice always chips in, doesn't it? He goes, actually, it's Manchester City, then Burnley, then Bradford. And you're like, right. He's got it.
I think it's important to point out this again, that this, I mean, I don't think this has happened. I think this has happened organically. I mean, I think we sort of now have podcast persona, and I've kind of got I'm the grumpy bully. And Chris is the hapless meat lover. And what are you, Taylor? I don't know, kind of vaguely perverted cat warrior. But this isn't necessarily how real life is. I love Chris.
My mum will be
amazing.
So proud. I love Chris. Chris, it's been an absolute pleasure this season to work with you. I've really genuinely enjoyed it an awful lot. Even more so when I didn't have to sit across from you in a studio and we could do this from home. No, I'm joking. That's horrible. It seems like such a long time ago, though, doesn't it, since we were sat in that basement in Newcastle in the studio recording these, like, face-to-face, spit flying everywhere and, you know, oh, God.
Yeah, and we'd have a cuppa. We'd have a cuppa beforehand and talk about all the shit we were going to say and then say it.
Yeah, I'd need a wee.
Yeah, you would. You would need a wee.
Yeah, but you can't do anything without needing a wee 10 minutes later, can you? That's very small bladder.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Harry's sponsors, Pod on the Tyne. As a listener to the podcast, you can start shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. Support our podcast and get your set delivered to you, including a razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover. And going to harrys.com, Pod on the Tyne, right now, we'll get you that trial pack. That's harrys.com/Pod on the Tyne. How come I have to read these all the time? Why can't we get George to do one of these sometime? George, you're the one who's used these Harry's razors.
My cheeks have never been smoother. I can do that. Wonderful. If you want me to do that, I'll just clip that. Here we go. Harry's razors. My cheeks have never been smoother.
I mean, right, in a season of twists and turns and things being completely mental and also ups and downs, takeover on, off, who knows, Steve Bruce, has it been good, has it been bad, who's playing where, what's the tactics? One thing which is always guaranteed is that Matt Ritchie is going to be Raj, as you like, and he has continued this season to be Raj, as you like, by kicking the ball harder than anyone's ever kicked it, and also kicking his teammates harder than anyone has ever kicked them as well. George, Matt Ritchie, you wrote stuff about him at the start of the season. He wrote stuff. That sounds terrible. You wrote
about him
at the start of the season about you wrote just daubed it in your own anyway. You wrote stuff about Matt Ritchie at the start of the season and his kind of effect he has on the team and the way he is and the wee angry Scottish bastard that he is. And it's been another one one of those years, hasn't it? He's had a couple of injuries and he's been out for a little while, but I do genuinely still think we miss him when he's not playing.
Yeah, he's the driving force of the team. He still is. He's the one. He's the shouter. He's the angry one. Yeah, I did that piece. I think it was when he was coming back from injury, and I mean, you know, it was effectively he's our angry Raj. And I the thing I love that day when he came back, and he either scored or made a couple of goals. I can't remember. Chris would remember. I can't remember what game it was. But I actually asked him afterwards, do you know what a Raj is? Do you know what a Raj? And he said, oh, it means angry, wee bastard, doesn't it? And he was like, yeah. And he was like, he took it in great spirit. And he can't, you know, he can't, not that he can deny it, but what is the Matt Ritchie of the season? I think that's a good question.
Yeah.
We know he kicked Christian Atsu up the backside. I don't think he can really look. And he, you know, in the last
corner flag,
one of the last games at Brighton. Yeah, well, I was going to come on to that. I think calling, you know, what did you do that for, you wee dick, to the linesman is great.
Yeah, how can you call that, you wee dick?
But I think, you know, this man who has this long association with absolutely detesting corner flags, and you know, this sort of irrational hatred of an inanimate object that's on each corner of the ground, a man who takes this perverse pleasure in inflicting damage on these poor, unsuspecting bits of plastic, launched himself at one, and the corner flag flies up into the air and smacks a Newcastle fan squarely in the plums, is just one. I mean, thankfully, no lasting damage.
Keith Robinson
was done, as far
was
as
his
we know.
Name. Keith Robinson.
Keith Robinson. Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, it is a sign, isn't it, of the time we live in, that he ended up on ITV News the following evening.
is Keith Robinson's Plums a name of a band?
Keith Robinson's
we
Plums,
we did that for
yeah.
a while, didn't we, this season?
Yeah.
We did
not
band,
bad,
possible
good.
Band names.
They were decent. They headlined the John Peel stage at Glastonbury in 2006, I believe. Yeah.
Do you want to hear what Robinson said about this situation?
Were the plums peeled? The plums were peeled.
It was slightly tender right. yesterday, but I am absolutely fine.
Slightly tender.
Right. Slightly tender plums.
Tender plums.
Right. We've all been there.
Good heavens. That links quite nicely into one of our new adverts, doesn't it? Anyway, we've got... who would you say has been our player of the season then, overall, across the entire year? Who has shone above everyone else? We've talked about Anson Maximan. I think you've got to make a case for Federico Fernandez. For me, I think he's been great at times. I think he's been so solid. Like the crew. He's been really, really good. What do you think?
I had to do this during lockdown. By that stage, we'd who would have been our player of the season, because it was sort of yeah. what would have been PFA player. And at that point, I went for Martin Dubravka, and I still think he's close to it, just because of the amount of games that have said that he kept Newcastle in. But there were a few mistakes from time to time, and I think that if it was over the course of all the season, I'd edge towards Federico Fernandez like you. I just think... I mean, yeah. He obviously played every single minute post-lockdown. He really is a leader out there as well, and he just never looks flustered. The other defenders, you're never quite sure on parts of them, whereas Federico Fernandez, there's like a calm and reassurance about him being there. And I think that given the sort of underwhelming signing that he was on deadline day a couple of years ago, he's done very, very well for the price tag Newcastle bought him for. And in a team that is very inconsistent, he actually... is pretty consistent, and so yeah, I think I'd probably just edge towards Federico Fernandez.
Well, I'll just edge towards Isaac Hayden, although there is now a court order preventing me from doing that in person.
Oh God! Hello, Isaac. I'm in the bath again. You're weird.
Is that how you conduct all interviews, so George? Now from home.
Look. If I ring somebody up, right, and they don't answer, and then they call me back, and I happen to be in the bath, what am I supposed to do?
So you had your iPad in the bath.
I was reading my iPad. I was looking at my iPad. I'm not telling you what I was looking at.
Was it? Did you FaceTime him?
No, I didn't. No, we've all done that though, surely. Like when we've been in the bath or in bed, and you're on the phone to somebody, and you press the FaceTime button. Oh, quick, get off. No, I didn't do that, no. I wish I hadn't mentioned that.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. Chris, 3 at the back or 4 at the back? What worked better? Go on, quick!
3 at the back was an end to a... It was a means to an end, sorry, and it was awful.
An end of the means,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it was. But four at the back, Newcastle... Well, it's and I hate to bring up managers of previous seasons, but it is that sort of short blanket analogy that when Newcastle had a five-man defence, apart from a couple of aberrations, they looked far better as a defensive unit, but couldn't score goals. And then when you flipped it around, they were getting their offensive players higher up the pitch, looked more dangerous, scored a lot more goals post-lockdown. But then really there was points where, and I know this was partly due to injuries as well, but really the defence sort of fell to pieces a little bit. So that is, I mean, that by its very nature is the issue with Newcastle United's squad. They are a sort of mid-table, lower mid-table team. And so they probably don't have the strength to be able to be one or the other, and they've sort of had to fudge it at times, and it hasn't been ideal, but they've probably just about found the right formula to get results at the reasonable times of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I have to answer that, preferably neither. Just to be a bit quicker.
A one-man back line.
Yeah, just Isaac Hayden on his own. It's always the same way you start out and you're sort of up at... And you feel slightly positive and you're thinking, oh, what could possibly happen this season? It's the Newcastle thing all over, isn't it? Where you're looking at, oh, we've bought a player for £40 million. And then slowly, as things go on, your expectations become tempered and the reality of the situation kicks in. It's just going to be another one of those years, isn't it? But we had some little high moments. We've talked about some of them today. The FA Cup run, I thought, was an interesting little distraction from the league season, and that wove its way through the narrative of the season with the games against Rochdale, where we took two games against Rochdale to get through, two games against Oxford United. We beat West Brom, and then we succumbed finally to Manchester City in the quarterfinals. But little things like that give fans that little ray of hope, don't they? They just give you that little distraction and they allow you to take your eye off the Premier League and off all the nonsense that goes with that just for 5 minutes. And I think that's the kind of things that I look for in a season. That's the sort of stuff that I enjoy. Chris, I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, it became a novelty this year. It shouldn't be a novelty that Newcastle United are getting to the quarterfinal of an FA Cup, but it is. Because that's what they've become under Mike Ashley. The Cups have actually been treated with disdain, and they've been even publicly said that they aren't the priority. The Premier League is the priority. So, I mean, in terms of, if you actually look at the way Newcastle reached the quarterfinal of the FA Cup, for the most part, it was pretty awful as well. I mean, as you say, they limped past Rochdale, they limped past Oxford, both after replays. They beat West Brom after extra time. Am I right? Yeah. Was it West Brom after extra time? Yeah, it was. No, Oxford was after extra time, was it?
Yeah, Oxford was extra time, yeah.
They beat West Brom as well. And so it wasn't like that they'd faced any real opposition in terms of there was no Premier League opposition until they got to the quarterfinals, and then they were awful, and that was really disappointing that it was going to be such a huge occasion, because you were going to hopefully have fans there for a quarterfinal, the first home quarterfinal they'd had in more than a decade and a half. And so that it was both a positive, but also the travesty that because it was such a big positive because of what Newcastle have become under Mike Ashley, that's it, Chris.
It kept the season alive. It kept the season alive, and it was a cup limp. It wasn't so much a cup run, but by the end of it, you know. But you know, you get through the third round. It's, oh my, you know, we're still in it, and it's like that was a novelty, still being in it after the third round, and then getting beyond the fourth round. That again, that was a novelty, and it's that feeling of, all right, this is just a little, and each game was a struggle, but it was that little reminder about what football can be. It doesn't just have to, I mean, it was still a grind, but it's not just about the grind of the Premier League. And I think that was very, very important, that sort of distraction was there. And to also sort of remind us, and I'm not talking about the cup as a distraction in its own right, by the way, I just mean the distraction to everything else that's been happening around the sort of team this season. But reminding people just about that sense of possibility, that football is about something else, you know, or can be about something else. And certainly by the end of it, certainly by the end of West Brom, you know, we're all thinking, could it be? And, you know, probably none of us really thought it. And then certainly that thought was kind of took a massive blow when Man City came out of the hat. And then again, when there was nobody in the stadium. But to have that feeling of something different is really, really important. And it is that sort of reminder of, you know, of that there is life beyond the Premier League, and there is life beyond just constantly having your head down, fulfilling fixtures, feeling pretty shit about things. And, you know, there was the famous windmilling moment, which, as we said earlier, then led to all those plastic cocks at West Brom. And it's that sort of, it's that kind of nonsense that's kind of really, that's really important. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed that sense of the season existing, you know, beyond existing for the sake of it, as it were, you know, that there was something to play for, that there was something still at stake beyond just relegation.
I mean, personally, one of my highlights, and it's not football related, it's not Newcastle United related, but my highlight of the year is going with you guys to the Football Writers Awards and getting to sit there and enjoy that evening and sit next to Alan Shearer for a good couple of hours and have a chat with him and had a really good night. I was slightly disappointed that Chris didn't turn up in a 70s velvet tuxedo with flares. But that would by no means have been the worst fashion faux pas of the evening when Fabian Scher's cropped trousers made an appearance and then subsequently went viral on Twitter after the photo I posted of them. So yeah, but it was a great night and I thoroughly enjoyed that. And thank you for having me along to that. What I will say though is there is one more category that we haven't touched upon yet and one more thing that I want to speak about, and that would be our quote of the season. Chris, I'm going to throw to you for this. What do we think is our quote of the season? I think there's only one option.
Yes, well, I'm pretty sure we know what the answer is going to be. But I want to give an honourable mention first. An honourable mention to Lee Charnley, Newcastle United's manager and director. I want to mention Mr. Charnley because, I'm just finding this exact. So back in August in the programme, Lee Charnley said that you'll be hearing more from me and that the club want to communicate clearly and proactively. And I just want to say how well that comment has aged and that really Newcastle United have reverted to type. And I mean, the last time there was not even a comment from Lee Charnley.
Hello, Lee.
Is he there?
Lee? Hello? Hello? Lee?
Is Lee even real?
Hello?
Is Lee a real person?
Have you seen Lee? Lee? Hello? Lee?
What's that? Where's he gone?
I think Lee Charnley doesn't exist. I think he's an idea. I think he's a concept that was drawn up by PR at Newcastle just to kind of somebody to deflect the blame onto for certain things. I don't even think he's real. Well, I've been sat in a room with him, but I think that was animatronics.
But then that does lead us on to... Chris is absolutely right to sort of highlight that. And, you know, it's laughable. It's also very annoying, actually, if you think about it. If you think about it a lot. But, you know, in this season when... Or this year, this 12-month period when there has been almost no communication from the club when it's really, really mattered. And having,
when they've furloughed staff. And
when they've furloughed staff and when all of this kind of stuff has happened around the club, they have reverted beyond type and they have not communicated with the people who matter most in football and who often matter least in actual, you know, in actual fact. And it's pretty disgraceful, that, let's be honest. However, one of the real difficulties at Newcastle is for the manager is that he becomes the spokesman. He becomes the spokesman for the club because nobody else talks. Okay, fine. Players talk, but in terms of strategy at the club, in terms of what's happening, in terms of the bigger picture, the chief executive or managing director, as it is invisible. He is Lee Charnley is the invisible man, just like Derek Lambias was beforehand. That's the way it is, and they don't put their head above the parapet. And you know they may have a reason for that, but what happens is the manager suffers. The manager suffers because every single thing the manager says is taken as gospel. It's stripped apart word by word. And I think that was all right when Rafa was manager because, A, he's such a deliberate, careful, controlled man. He would come into a press conference. He would have a message. He would stick to it by and large. And he knew what he was going to say. Now, someone like Steve Bruce is actually, for journalists, he's actually very helpful. And I know there's all this stuff in the press about, you know, or social media about Brucey's mates and things like that. But what he actually quite enjoys press conferences and he likes chatting and he knows that journalists need something to write about. And so he's always been very helpful. But what that means is he can trip over his words sometimes. He can probably say too much. He can give three answers to variations of the same questions. And those answers will sometimes be a bit different. And that doesn't help. Because if all you hear is the manager, you take it away and say, oh, he's talking rubbish, he's talking crap and all that sort of stuff. But he doesn't get any help. The manager doesn't get help. And this has been a long-term problem for the people in, you know, in that position. And I've got great sympathy. I honestly have, because they don't get the protection they need. At other clubs, they will get protected, and they don't at Newcastle. They're hung out to dry. But anyway, that leads us up. That leads us to one of the great Bruceisms. I think I've mentioned this before. When he was Sunderland manager, the PR staff at Sunderland, they kept this little book of Bruce, famous kind of Brucey quotes that they always referred to. It was very harmless. It was very sweet. They loved him, but he would always kind of come out with a memorable phrase. There was one at Sunderland he used to do all the time. He would say, oh, you know, it's been that way since Pussy was a cat, which doesn't make any sense at all when you think about it. Anyway, but it has to be the bacon quote.
I don't want
to
think about that.
It has to be the bacon quote, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, just to give it the context that it deserves, a reporter asked him, it was after one of the mid-season breaks, wasn't it? A reporter shouted up, how was the break, Steve? Or how was the break? How did you enjoy the break? And Steve replied with, Chris?
How's the bacon, did you say?
How's the bacon, did you say? How is the bacon, did you say? Amazing.
And then when we were on our way to West Brom, Taylor, on the bus, that was just chanted for like,
how's the bacon?
How's the bacon?
How's the bacon?
How's the bacon? Did you say?
How's the bacon?
Did you say?
Yes.
Magnificent.
Chris, you should do a one-on-one exclusive podcast with Steve Bruce and just ask him about meat. Just talk to him about sausages and bacon and
pork pies.
Would you be up for that? I reckon he'd love that. I reckon he'd really enjoy that.
I think that'd be my favourite ever interview.
He did say it again. He said at Sunderland, in moments of stress, he says the problem is you go to the fridge and you pull out a beer and pull out a pork pie, and that became one of the. So he's got a meat. He does have a meat related, fascination, doesn't he?
We're going to start wrapping up, lads, I think. What do we reckon?
Thank God.
Yes.
Yes, let's close the book on this season.
And then throw the book in the sea, yeah. Set fire to the book, fire it into space. Thanks a lot, George, Chris, for your time across the year, your candour and your lovely dry humour.
You said can.
Oh, we forgot about cans, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. God. Don't.
No, let's not.
No, but thanks to everyone who's listened and downloaded us. Absolutely. And who's interacted with us and stopped us in the street
sent
and
us
said,
abuse.
You guys are my heroes. To the other ones who call us wankers, that's also fine. Yeah. No, it's been great. It's been a very long first season, but we've loved doing it. It's been a great outlet for us, and we really appreciate you listening.
And also thank you to Adonis, who works behind the scenes on this, getting it all together, and Tom as well, our production guys, who make us sound slightly less ridiculous than what we actually are.
Not sure about that. Well,
it's debatable.
But it's been great fun. It, like you say, it's been a smashing outlet to have this, to kind of talk about this stuff. And we hopefully will continue, and we'll keep talking to you. We'll keep bringing you bits of information and news as it breaks. And we'll continue to come back with Pod on the Tyne every week through the closed season as well, until the Premier League restarts. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks, lads. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Likewise. George is getting some teeth out, I think.
Oh, are you getting your teeth out, George?
Yeah, I've had to put it off. I'm getting them all kicked out and replaced with wooden ones.
Simon Cowell-style veneers, is that what you're getting? Oh, that's going to look amazing.
Yeah, not looking forward to it.
Thanks very much for listening. Take care of yourselves, and we shall speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
As you'd expect, most of the listeners to this show live in Newcastle, so if you run a business in the city, what better way to promote it than through our show, just as the football season is making a comeback. Our listeners are loyal and engaged, just like you, so get in touch, sponsor our podcast, and give your business a boost. To advertise on this very show, go to www.theathletic.com/podcastadsuk. You can fill out a very simple form and tell us exactly how much you'd be willing to spend promoting your business. We'll be straight back in touch, and you could soon be sponsoring your favourite podcast. So go to www.theathletic.com/podcastadsuk.